2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to So Hot Right Now. My name is Sophie and this is the Art and Culture Show right here on 2SER. We have a massive, massive show for you today. 4A just launched their latest exhibition, the Burrungong Fray, which actually looks like a big part of probably a blight in history, I would say, in racial tensions between Australian Chinese as well as white Australia. There is a brand new exhibition that kind of details this moment in history at 4A. So we're going to be talking to the curator and assistant curator as well as the artist. Also, we have a new special guest on Gaggle of Gigs, and you'll meet them in this week's Gaggle. But Blake will also be there. But most of all, it is 40 years of Mardi Gras, and they're celebrating with a big installation. And we're going to be talking to the co-designer of 40 Years of Love. Big show, but to get you there, here's a tune from Ruby and the Romantics. It's called I Cry Alone.
Friends come by to cheer me. I smile and say I feel okay, but I cry alone. Each lonely night without you. But when they talk about you,
was Ruby and the Romantics with I Cry Alone. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture right here on 2SER. To celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras protest turned celebration, artists Maurice Goldberg and Matthew Aberline created 40 Years of Love, a three-story inflatable art installation that celebrates 40 years of protest, love and equality within the LGBTIQ community. This hugely fabulous work will take over the iconic Taylor Square after being deemed the winner of the Monument Public Art Project. We're joined in studio now with artist Maurice Goldberg to chat to us more about it. Hello.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. Big day or big weekend for you.
It's been a huge 3 or 4 months, actually.
Yeah.
but this has been very big. Yesterday we installed, it took us from 7 a.m. until we quit at about 6, and we've got about another hour to do this morning.
Wow, incredible. It's a massive project, 3 stories high. How did the idea for this installation all come about?
Well, Mardi Gras got sponsorship, really generous sponsorship, from Clovermore and the City of Sydney. And so they ran a huge competition Australia-wide, and we entered the competition, and we got into it, I guess, and we created something, I guess, which they thought was a bit astounding.
Yeah. How did you kind of like start collaborating with Matthew on this?
Well, Matthew and I have an art studio together. And we create works all over Australia at the moment. We have works in the International Convention Centre. We were in Museum of Contemporary Art for Vivid last year. We've been doing quite a few inflatables, but we don't just do inflatables, but we love doing big, bold, happy, joyous works. We're into the kind of art that makes people smile. We both had a bit of an allergic reaction, I guess, to the way that so much art today, contemporary art, is all about pain and angst and anger. And we kind of think if you want to change in the world, then you got to put people in the frame of mind to create that sort of world. So we create joyous art so people can live a joyous life.
I mean, big and bold, that's probably one way to describe Mardi Gras in general. What kind of shapes and like messages did you want to kind of put through this artwork?
Well, we had originally 5 themes, and then we expanded it to 6 core themes. So number one, we wanted to acknowledge that this is actually, in some ways, a very solemn day. The actual 40th anniversary of the march, the protest march, where hundreds of people were sent to jail and went to court and were bashed up by the police, entrapped by the police. I mean, of course, since then there's been I'm sorry from the police force and from the government. I'm from the Sydney Morning Herald and all different people.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of this was our Stonewall. It was our and the gay Anzac Day. It was the breakthrough where a lot of people got very, very badly hurt. But since then, from that moment, it became a force to be reckoned with. And the march turned into a parade, and the parade turned into a festival, and the festival turned into one of the world's biggest celebrations of gay, lesbian, of GLQTI. I always get tongue-tied when I say those.
LGBTQI.
Thank you. It's like a library. And I mean, I'm gay and I'm part of the community, and I love the community. It's one of the reasons we got involved in this project is we have a passion for our society, our part of society. Certainly a part of who we are. Matthew actually has been very involved in Mardi Gras for 7 years. He was the director of clothes, of fashion in Mardi Gras, and he dressed people like Sidney Lauper, and
wow.
He's represented in museums all around the world. He's been called a living icon in some international magazines. He's pretty amazing person. So his background in Mardi Gras is enormous. My background is I've been in many parades over the last 25 years.
Look, I think that's good enough. I mean, you're celebrating the community there. But you mentioned you had 6 themes, core themes. What were they?
So the themes are, first there's the pink triangle, which of course was a gay symbol of repression that came from Nazi Germany. And then it was picked up by the AIDS lobbies as a symbol of fighting back, so that money was spent on defeating the disease that was killing so many people. The second symbol is adversity, and it's the ribbon, the AIDS ribbon. Gay people have had many kinds of adversity, not just HIV, AIDS, but the social stigma that has happened on and off for thousands of years. I mean, many parts of society, gay people have been very included, and bisexuality has been a norm. But other parts of history, we have been killed, bashed,
destroyed in every way possible. So adversity is the second theme. Third theme is freedom. We use a butterfly as our symbol of freedom. There's nothing more important, I think, for gay people than to be free. And our dance parties and our debates and our diversity of people all, I think, head in the one direction. That's towards freedom of people's rights. The fourth one, diversity of our people. Just those letters is enough to say that we are diverse and we're not one polarized type of people. We're all different types of people, but we have one thing in common, and that is what we're celebrating with this. And then the second last one is love. You know, being gay is about love. In fact, that's probably the sole thing that is unique between the all those initials, is that love is central. And finally, we wanted to include First People of Australia. And so we worked with an Aboriginal artist, Lawrence Shearer, and we developed with him a symbol that was about inclusion. One of the things we've been hearing more about is that Aboriginal people struggle sometimes within their own societies to be included. Mm-hmm. And more and more Aboriginal people are being included in their own world as well as in our world, as well as in the whole world. And it's becoming a really big important issue. So we wanted to create a symbol that was about inclusion of all types of people, not just gay people.
And what was that symbol?
It's a group of typical kind of spiral Aboriginal symbols that sit around a waterhole, in essence.
Oh, wow.
And the pieces are all different colours that could represent different types of people, the diversity within an actual cultural entity.
Mm. So that's a lot of symbolism for one structure. So how did you kind of combine all those elements into that three-story installation that will sit at Taylor Square?
Well, there was a big decision. The decision was that we wanted at heart this to be a celebration. So we wanted to create something that if once people stood in front of it or laid, so many people we see come through at the moment, they're laying down underneath it with their cameras in hand, doing this shot through the middle of this triangle. It's a pink triangle. Mm. And the pink triangle's covered in these crazy, wild, enthusiastic, some of them, are, by the way, some of these inflatable pieces are 4 meters tall.
Wow.
And there's literally hundreds of them. And celebration is key. That's what it was all about. We build it in a way where each feature piece, we call them, is actually zipped on to the body.
Wow.
So we were able to move things around and make things work. But right in the middle of the whole thing is a huge heart with angel's wings on it. And that's our symbol of the 40 years of love.
Amazing. So, you know, you already got nearly probably 1,000 people RSVPing to this event tomorrow. How's it all going to go down?
Well, we're incredibly excited. We were in the Sydney Morning Herald today, did a beautiful photograph, and Time Out's done some amazing work. There's lots going on. Mm. We have no doubt that from the experience we're having so far from people who are seeing it, they're all smiling, and we have no doubt that Sydney's going to come and rejoice in Mardi Gras 40 years, in the gay community's 40 years of development growth. So tomorrow, 4 o'clock, anyone can turn up to the opening. I don't know how we're all going to
feel. Like you're going to, like, you know, stop like traffic at Flinders and Oxford Street by this, right?
Yeah. Clover Moore is doing the opening. There'll be lots of amazing people. I know there's some 78ers that are coming. The original 78ers are coming. There's people from all different parts of society. People are flying from interstate to come.
Wow.
As well. It's going to be a really, really big event. Lots of people say, well, hang on, didn't the anniversary happen in March, February, March? And we say that the festival of Mardi Gras is not the march, the protest march. So
no.
This is the protest march that is being celebrated, that these courageous, audacious, amazing warriors, men and women, risked their lives to cause change to happen. And we are now the winners. We're the beneficiaries of their audacious courage.
Mm. Well, if you can't see it tomorrow, you never fear, because the structure will be up till September. But Maurice, thank you so much for joining us here on It's So Hot Right Now.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
We'll put all those details up of where you can see it. Well, it's just at Taylor Square. You probably can't miss it being a three-story structure. But it will be a great celebration of love and pride. So do head down and check it out. We'll pop this interview as well on 2SER.com. Going to jump back into the music now. Here's one from Kenny Rogers. It's called Tulsa Turnaround.
I had never been stoned, 'cause when I get high I can't leave the women alone. Omaha sheriff and his boys getting ready for slaughter, looking for the man that turned on the mayor's daughter. Showed me the Tulsa turnaround. Stepped on my toes, turned me on and turned me down. Fit me like a hand in a glove. Taught me how to love y'all. Five miles I rode between me and the hounds. Rosy throat sheriff and his deputy is dragging me down. I wish I was back in Macon, taking it easy. But if a man's gonna eat fried chicken, he's gotta get greasy. Omaha, honey, had a hole on a hell of a thing. Down in the holler of the evening, you could hear her sing. She said a funky butt showed me the Tulsa turnaround. Stepped on my toes, turned me on and turned me down. Fit me like a hand in a glove. Taught me how to love y'all. Showed me the Tulsa turnaround. Stepped on my toes, turned me on and turned me down. Fit me like a hand in a glove. Taught me how to love y'all.
Climate change poses the same threat right now.
Wind is destroying a lot of problems. And number one, it's killing the birds. Killing the birds. Killing the birds. Killing
right now.
Coral bleaching.
Solar panels.
The Carmichael mine.
Carbon emissions.
Hydraulic fracturing.
Plastic bags.
This is too much.
What are we doing to the planet? Subscribe to Think Sustainability on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to find out.
The world is burning.
You're listening to So Hot, now your weekly dose of arts and culture. Now it's time for your pop culture fix.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Oh.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with
Blake Howard
and Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday.
I'm sounding way less Kathleen Turner than the last
you
one.
You are. The huskiness is gone. The sexy husk.
I know. The sexy is gone.
Things are a bit different for you, Blake.
They are. Literally, as we're talking, my lovely wife, Sam, is going to be induced to have our second baby in 6 days.
So that means you're gone.
I'm going to be gone just for about a month. I think at the beginning, I am going to have two children under two for a short while with my wife. And so I may never sleep again. I may go insane. These things happen. But guys, as happens, you know, a baton must be passed, right? Mm-hmm. So the amazing Maria Lewis, Soph, as you know, handed me a baton and
she
said,
did.
I'm going to be a writer, a screenwriter, an author, a purveyor of fine freelancing, whatever we want to call it.
Which is just a bit too much for me to do one extra podcast a week.
I don't have any time to do a third podcast a week of all the other podcasts I do. So she handed the reins to me and I'm stoked to be a part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes you need someone to step in.
Yeah.
You need someone to save you when you're making a mad dash exit, and I'll be standing ready to catch a new baby, so I'm not going to be able to be doing the podcast next week.
That's okay, because we found an amazing person.
We did. Tali Alatea, welcome to Gaggle of Geeks.
Thank you, guys. Oh, as long as you hand me the baton and not the baby, I think I'm going to be all right, because that's a whole new world.
Oh, my God. Like I'm sure your kids are adorable, Blake, but I enjoy just going, holding their hands while you're carrying it.
Yeah.
So cute.
See, it always worries me about how to cradle their neck, because they've got such flimsy heads that they can't support.
Yes.
So they're always like, support the neck. And I was like, you're freaking me out. So I'm so focused on the neck that there's a chance that the rest of their limbs are flailing around and they're on the ground.
The hot tip is, okay, the neck is basically your main area of concentration, but it's like a burrito. You just, basically the head and the neck is the top of the burrito, so that's what you have to be careful with, but you just wrap them in a little swaddle so they're like a little tortilla, and you just get them in there and that's how you hold it. But anyway.
We did digress.
Tali, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. This is my dream come true, because I actually, when I went to university, and I did an honours thesis, funnily enough, on the representation of Australian, the representation of Australianness in Who magazine,
because
I love pop culture so much. So I literally wrote a thesis on Who magazine, and like Chris Hemsworth and Hugh Jackman, was like, this Australianness is celebrated. They're like fair dinkum, true lads. And my lecturers were always like, where are you going to go with your life? And I was like, you wait one day.
One day I'm going to go on a pop culture podcast.
You find a geek and pop culture podcast.
Here I am.
I'm going to find something. And this week, I mean, look, so the intro is, firstly, welcome. You may have heard Tali. She was one of the amazing folks in what was called the Thunderdome of film critic auditions for Mark Fennell's job for the Triple J movie reviewer.
Big shoes. Spoiler alert, didn't win. Just in case.
Oh, look, I didn't win either. I didn't even get a Guernsey for a phone call. So, welcome. But I had heard of Tali. I had I've done a couple of guest spots on ABC Radio with Mel Tate.
Mm-hmm. The evenings program.
The evenings program's down there. So I had heard of her before even her audition involved with that show. I'm so stoked that you're here.
Thank you so much.
So welcome. And thank you for being a part of it. And thanks for coming along. And after an honours thesis in Who magazine and after joining us on a highfalutin culture show, what's the topic of the week, Soph?
Big dick energy.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I know this is called Gal Geeks and people are like, how does this even relate to the geekdom? Well, Twitter. Well,
Twitter.
It is Twitter.
Everything comes back to geekdom and pop culture when Twitter gets involved. Mm-hmm. So, guys, I'm going to let Soph and Tali particularly talk about big dick energy. The only thing I'm going to say is, this is the great thing about social media. Sometimes you miss something, and I was maybe hours behind what happened. Mm. I then saw a tweet from a friend that said something to the effect of, here's the Marvel Cinematic Universe big dick energy ranked, and it was just a picture of Chris Hemsworth walking out of the surf. And then I had to go back and go, what is going on?
What happened?
Soph and Tali, what is going on with big dick energy?
You start, Tali.
Well, big dick energy.
I'll give it to you.
I think it got its huge thing on Twitter this week.
Literally.
With it's huge, yeah. Anthony Bourdain's death. And someone memorialized him by saying that he epitomized what big dick energy was. And Anthony Bourdain, as a food critic and traveler, he was very irreverent in the way that he spoke. So I think he would have taken it as a compliment. I think anyone else who dies and someone memorializes them as having big dick energy, they'd be like, I'm going to come back and haunt you. That's really offensive.
Yeah.
But I think Anthony Bourdain totally would have taken it as a compliment, would have loved it.
Loved it.
And so it kind of came out as other people who have big dick energy, which essentially are the people who are confident and carry themselves like you would imagine a guy with a big appendage does.
But they're not arrogant.
Not arrogant, because they can
big
back it
difference.
Up. They've got the receipts. So they're like, it's like Serena Williams walks into a tennis tournament with big dick energy because she knows she's won like 12 million grand slams.
Exactly.
But she can back it up. And that's what's important. It's not just these
arrogant
guys.
And you can tell
guys.
Because the ones who are arrogant are the ones who are overcompensating.
Yeah. I think someone said that that's tiny hand energy is what the opposite of big dick energy
is. Tiny hand energy.
Tiny hand energy.
I understand.
Yes.
Now, and so that's when, but the big one, I guess the most memeable, which hit pop culture was Ariana Grande, a really unfortunate photo of Ariana Grande and her fiancé. Is it Pete Davidson?
Yep. From Saturday Night
From Saturday Night Live. He's a comedian. She's licking a lollipop and he's smugly also suckling on his own lollipop as they're walking along. And it's just a really deeply unfortunate
Ariana
picture.
Ariana Grande should avoid all food. Do you remember when she licked the donut?
She did that on purpose.
Stop putting
things
in your
mouth. She was just like, I'm sick of y'all. I'm going to lick this donut for the pap. Precisely.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's good stuff.
So,
but they started putting out lists ranking the MCU heroes / villains.
Right.
Now, should we start from the small end or the big one?
let's start with the small.
Mm-hmm. So the small, most people would agree, it's at the moment Peter Quill.
Peter Quill.
Definitely overcompensating.
So yeah, Chris Pratt, for those who are playing at home. He does have a touch of the overcompensation, especially in the later movies.
Oh,
he definitely
gosh.
Does.
Like, what was he doing in Infinity War?
Who knows? Who knows what he was doing?
And then, of course, Iron Man in the tiny hand department.
Oh.
It was quite synonymous with so many lists that Iron Man was like
no.
on the time. Him and Doctor Strange, because it was all bravado.
No, Doctor Strange is low. Tony Stark.
Yeah, he can back it up. Oh. He's also got Gwyneth Paltrow helping him out. He's got it all going on.
But compared to the... maybe he's in the middle compared to the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah. I mean, look, not everyone has had nuclear energy turn them into a rage monster. Yeah. And engorged their nether region unnaturally.
The thing I love is, like, most people put Hulk in the tiny hands. But Bruce Banner in the big in the
Ruffalo.
Big D.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen Ruffalo's receipts. So we just say number one's Hemsworth, right?
This is the thing. It's like, at the moment, it's pretty much Black Widow and Hemsworth as Thor.
Oh, right.
They're up there.
Yeah,
because, it's ladies can have the big dick energy.
Yeah.
Totally. And out of the small amount, most of the ladies are high up there.
I did see a great photo that just said, this is big dick energy. And it was like Rihanna, like lounging.
Oh.
And she just looked.
She totally has
she
it.
Just,
she has it.
She's just
so
like,
many levels.
She just. She had it.
I did enjoy all the ranking of people did. They even tried to do it with politicians. They did it with bachelors, like Australian bachelors who has big dick energy and who doesn't.
Oh, you poor sods.
Yeah. I think it was Tim Robbins, one of the bachelors. He was the most highly rated. The upcoming, who's the upcoming one?
Honey Badger.
Yeah, he's definitely got it. And the boring run, Richie Strawn, definitely doesn't have it.
No, he
don't have it. Maddie J don't have it. Mm-mm-mm.
No.
Sophie Monk only have a lot of it.
She's got swagger. But her big dick energy falls away when she like trips over and then she puts it on Instagram. Like, it's hilarious, but she just does
She's
that.
Owning it.
Yeah, that's it. She's owning
she's
it.
She's owning her BDE.
She owns it. Right. So this is what the show is.
Welcome, Dali.
Oh, and guys, I think I've got a call coming in. Surprisingly, she's not there the next week. No, I'm totally down for all of this. I think I jumped too quickly into big dick energy.
So there's a stack of other news, but guys, you're going to have to jump to our podcast on Gaggle of Geeks to check that out. Tali is going to be there. And for the next 4 weeks, she's going to be here with Soph. And occasionally I might phone in, do a baby name reveal.
Oh, do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can give you a clue.
Can you?
Yeah, I can give you a clue.
Is it a geeky name?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a clue. Okay, I'll give you a clue. If you know me, when you hear it, you will go, Oh, that makes sense.
It's not Michael Mann, is it?
No, it's not Michael Mann. It's not Michael Mann. But I did love, you know how much my heart leapt when Tali's like, I was at uni doing a thesis on pop culture. I'm like, I did a thesis too on Michael Mann because I'm obsessed with him now, the podcast as well. But yeah, so super awesome. But no, if you know me and you know what I deeply love as a geek, the name will not be a surprise. But it's a very cool name.
So it's not Bruce Wayne either.
It's not Bruce Wayne. I don't like Bruce. I don't like the name Bruce or Wayne. Mm-hmm. I don't like either of those names.
I was going to say, I'm like, Robin? I know you love Batman, no. But it's like...
Alfred.
It's not Alfred. Don't guess, because if you get it, I will tell. But you're on the right. You're on the right track.
Oh, the plot thickens.
The plot thickens. You'll have to wait.
Well, but if you're on the Twitters, share us your list with us. Just tag at 2SER. Because I want to know.
Tag at 2SER.
I want to know your BDE tag, list, especially of your superhero BDE
tag
list.
Tag Tali, tag yes. Soph. We'll make sure that everyone is shared on there and tagged so that you can go. And we'll call you out on Saturday too. We'll be like, oh, we'll call you out today and be like, guys, Big Dick Energy, Marvel Cinematic Universe, go.
I cannot wait.
Anyhow, that was Gaggle Geeks.
Thank you, Soph.
Thank you, Blake. We'll catch you in a few weeks' time. Thank you, Tali, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Tals.
If you want to hear more of us chatting, just look up 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks, the podcast, because it'll be much longer than this.
It will be much longer, and it's everywhere. So because we're on the Whooshka podcast app, and that's all over Google apps, Google Podcasts now. As
I know,
well
it
as
just launched this week.
Just launched. So you'll be able to catch us on Google Podcasts if you've got an Android phone or an on Apple Podcasts if you've got an iPhone, so yep. You can catch us all over the place.
Yep. Until then, bye. Oh, dear. No, but seriously, do tag us on Twitter. We do want to hear your list. I mean, hey, this is culture. This is 2018 culture right here. You're listening to So Hot Right Now. And coming up, we're going to be hearing from my producer, Nicole, who went to the latest Sephora exhibition, the Barangong Affray. So we're going to be hearing from that next. But to get you there, here's one from Tennis. It's called Solar on the Rise.
Like the sacred mysteries, they're all the same. Dark, I roam like plants that throw their fragrance round. Roots that clutch their through the dust below the ground.
My soul.
your food, wine and art revolution is back. Celebrate all things French at Sydney's French Festival in Circular Quay in the Rocks from Thursday, July 12 to Sunday, July 15. Check out over 100 food specialities, the Cheese Dome, open-air cinema, French wine bars, live performances or our traditional French Christmas market in the Rocks. See the full program at bastillefestival.com.au. Entry is free. 2SER is a media partner of Bastille Festival Sydney.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture with me, Sophie Lai. Between November 1860 and September 1861, the goldfields of Burrungong, situated near what we know now as Yeung, was the site of Australia's largest racially motivated riot. Antagonism over gold mining access and diverse cultural habits saw misunderstandings transformed into brutal violence all across the goldfields. On the receiving end of the abuse was Chinese miners, who were subjected to threats, robbery and sustained acts of violence. This violence and abuse transcends the physical and became legislative, an important prelude to what became the White Australia policy. The Burrungong Affair is the new major exhibition at Foray Centre for Contemporary Asian Art, an exquisite portrayal and response to these events that fundamentally changed our history as a nation. This exhibition sees the marriage of two great Chinese-Australian artists, Jason Fu and John Young Zurung. Our producer, Nicole Beck, spoke with the curators and the artists behind the work. And first off, we're going to hear from the curators, Michael Doe and Michaela Tai.
Can you just chat to me about this exhibition? Apparently it's been in the works for
ages.
Yeah, so what's that all about?
So Foray has, I think with all curators and all organisations, has many projects that sit on the back burner for a while. And I think flashpoints in Australian history that engage with Asian histories have always been something that Foray is interested to examine. So the Lambing Flat riots for us was something that had been researched by previous directors, previous curators. There's notes that go back years on our file about this particular incident. They published, you know, written articles about it. But for us, it really kind of early last year, we decided that now was the time to dedicate resources and put in a whole structure around telling this story in a way that is going to be really long-term and significant.
Was there any particular event or anything that happened at this time for you to realise that this was the right time to shed light on this event?
I think for us, early last year, politics in the world had really focused on this idea of migrant, and the migrant story is really important right now, and I think the responsibility of nations like Australia in how we decide to respond has become pressing and more urgent. So this story about, it's a historical story, but it is very much a story of 2018 and the decision that we can actively make on how we respond to these situations. So it felt like it was all of a sudden very relevant.
And I think while, you know, at the very core it is a story about European-American, Australian-born miners and an altercation with Chinese miners, the artists have really worked through race. So it's not a show about identity at all. It's about the core of humanity and the fabric of that and what we do as humans and how we respond and, you know, how we are stretched and the circumstances that lead up to all of these things.
This work was first released in Yeung. Can you chat me through how the two releases has happened and why?
Sure. So the process of putting together the show really revealed certain sites of great significance. And we thought in order to really set off the show and inaugurate it, we wanted to commemorate each of these sites. And that's what the artists really decided on, because it was a really sort of a uniform and lateral sort of decision-making process. So they said we would do something at Blackguard Gully, which is the mining flat where the Chinese miners were mining, at the Yeung Chinese Cemetery, which has recently been rediscovered in the last 10 years with Chinese graves that had been overgrown with bushes, and at Currawong Farm, where James Roberts, you know, the man of the hour, sheltered all the Chinese miners. So in the works, you'll see glimmers of these different performances, and that's what we really did. We invited the community because they've been so generous with us. They've opened their homes, opened their archives, opened their research books, and just let us really just soak in and read all the work that they've gone into, because some people have really devoted their lives to sort of know, pulling through the threads of this history. So we wanted to give them something as much as we were taking from them. So it was a really mutual process.
Can you tell me more about how you got in touch with individuals and their families and how you unpacked those kind of stories and archives?
Oh, well, it's a really rhizomatic process. So we started by talking to a few people who we knew were researching in the area, like Karen Schamberger, who's the historian for the show, and she's done her PhD on this subject. And through her, we met, you know, other people like Daphne Lowe Kelly, and then we met Robin Atherton. So it was a real snowballing process. And we've really said, you know, as historians, as curators, we're almost like tourists in this big story. We're following different sources, and at each point, there's different decisions to be made, different turns, different obstacles, and we've really just followed our nose. And we've spent over 2 weeks really living there, and of course the 18 months, you know, which we've been working on the show, so phone calls back and forward, letters and whatnot. So it's really through these personalities and what has already been there that we've been able to, I guess, mine their research and really pull to what we wanted to really spotlight in the exhibition.
You spoke about a sort of give and take between the gallery and the community. What do you feel the community has gotten back out of this experience?
I think the biggest thing that's come out of it is that we started this project with this first stage in Young, which happened in April, this exhibition, and then the next stage is we're producing a sort of artist book that will be hopefully going to all the schools and then available in the local area that is sort of brings this story to life in a sort of accessible way. But it's really excitingly is that Hilltop Council, the local council, is working with us to make permanent monuments on the sites, which we didn't predict at the beginning. And I think that's a real, I mean, that's going to be outlive all of us as a first marker. There's no markers there. So that's really, I think, in terms of the community, we're so delighted that they want to work with us to do that. And I think the artists are pretty excited.
I'll just ask you lastly how and why you chose the artists you did.
Well, actually, we appointed the historian first. Karen was the first person on board because we thought from the get-go we needed someone like her. So she's been integral to the creative team from the beginning. And then I think the reason why this show has never happened before was that they could never find the right artists. And it has to be more than one because one person can't tell the story as this, you know, it's a big responsibility. So we wanted two artists at least, and I think John and Jason, they've both got very different work. So they approach how they look at history with lots of rigour, but the outcome is like completely different. So that's great. And also they kind of love each other a lot. So we wanted to work with an artist that they had chosen each other. We weren't matchmaking artists working together, and that meant that we had a family that could do this research together and be... support each other as we went through this kind of difficult history.
And I think the people in Young and the surrounding areas really sense that, because at first, I mean, you know, you've got to understand that people who live in this area are not just young couples who have decided to move there to set up life. They've got great lineages, great histories, their homesteads. This is their life, and they're so connected to the land of which they, you know, farm or whatever on. So they really, you know, after a couple of few little hurdles at the beginning, they really sense this energy, this, you know, collaborative, this open, this generous team. And that's how we've gotten to where we've gotten. And I think really, I mean, it's intangible, but without that, none of this would have happened and gotten to this far. So, yeah, I think that was really lovely. Yeah.
That there was Nicole Beck chatting with Michael Doe and Michaela Tai, the curators of 4A's latest exhibition, The Burrungong Fray. Up next, she'll be speaking with the artist, but we're going to go to a quick break first. Here's a tune from Alalas. This one's called Follow You Down.
About just what you've come to be. See, things do spoil. hours I'd have known you come around. Follow you down. Hours I'd have seen what you'd intend.
Hi, I'm Craig Donarski, director of Casula Powerhouse Art Centre in Liverpool, and I have a cold, but it's warm in the theatre when we present Christine Arnoux in conversation and song for NAIDOC Week. It's on Tuesday, 10th of July, 11 a.m, and it's totally free. We're gearing up for one of our biggest events of the year, the annual Way Out West Children's Festival. It's on from 18 to 21 of July. We're putting on 224 events across 4 big days, and the best part is most of it's free. You can enjoy breakfast, brunch or lunch at Bellbird Dining and Bar. Why not visit casulapowerhouse.com and check out all the details.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of art and culture. You just heard from there from Alalas with Follow You Down. We've just been speaking about the Burrungong Fray, an incredible new exhibition that delves into the Burrungong Goldfield riots in the 1860s. Our producers spoke with both the artists in depth about their creative portrayals of the events. First, we'll hear from John Young Zerung, followed by Jason Fu.
Can you talk about the story of James Roberts and how you've illustrated that through your work?
Yeah, James Roberts, I think he was a very interesting character because he actually came to Lemming Flats as a very young man, and he was actually responsible for a very large property very early on. And but the interesting thing is that out of all the people that that were involved in the actual riot, James Roberts is the one who actually volunteered to actually, in a way, shelter all these 1,500 people. And the great thing about that farm was that at the moment it's quite bare, but the fantastic thing about it is that in spring it's a canola farm, so the whole place is this intense cadmium yellow in colour, which is sort of, you know, very, very... I wish I could go back and do some more work about that, because it, to me, that's like really indicative of that sense of benevolence that's been passed down, you know, that sort of positivity of his whole life. And I think that certainly in with his descendants, he's got this very interesting family now too that has got all the old architecture still from the farm. And And we've actually used some of his descendants to help us in making of the film, and all the drone shots in the film and things like that. They really helped us, and they actually acted in the actual video as well. So yeah.
How did his descendants receive your work? What did they think?
I don't think they knew what to expect. I think that we just sort of basically asked them to do certain actions in the film, but they were really helpful, and I think they were really accommodating. Basically, I think that down to their sheep, the sheep didn't move at all during our shoot. They were very cooperative sheep, you know. it was like as if their land was so. It was this cauldron, this land that held a lot of stories, and ours was just like one more story. That's how I felt about his property. That it's just sort of it's this place that can hold all these stories.
So, like Jason, you also creatively reimagined the idea of pigtails and that relevance to this story. Can you talk us through your video work and what you've done with the pigtails and that?
The pigtails. Pigtails is a very big thing because the history of the pigtail in Laming Flats is pretty iconic in a way because, first of all, the Chinese obviously had pigtails. And of course, it's considered in the imperial days to be, you know, a status sort of thing, having pigtails. But at the same time, during the riots, the pigtails were pulled and some of them were actually scalped. The Chinese were scalped. And then after they scalped them, they used to hang these pigtails on the flags, on the roll-up flag. And then they would take it off the roll-up flag and whip the Chinese with it as well. So it's like this object that becomes weaponized. My use of the pigtails is to, in a way, sort of reverse a lot of those signs. And I asked a really beautiful young Celtic model with like 1,000 freckles on her face, put her in a pigtail. So she's in the traditional sort of Chinaman's garb, you know, like in a pigtail, but I'm sort of reversing the way in which one could see what would happen if it was somebody like her who got her, you know, pigtail pulled and scalped, how people would react in that situation.
Hey, I'm Jason Fu, and this is my work for the Barangrong Affray.
When I was reading about your work, one thing that came up was how we can look at history through a romanticised, a political or kind of tragic lens, and how that makes it difficult to talk about the story. Can you talk me through how you've worked with that in this work?
Yeah, I think that comes from... I guess when you're first in primary school and high school, well, for me anyway, learning about history, you just assume that, you know, everything you read is just true because it's in a book and it's been, you know, it's in the curriculum, whatever. But I think what you learn more and more is that it's not about if it's truthful or not truthful, but sort of how truthful it is and what perspective someone has, and also what life experiences skews how they perceive an event. So especially as an artist, I personally don't see an artist's role, not all artists' role, but maybe my role as sort of non-political role. Doesn't mean that it doesn't have an agenda, but that my role isn't to change people's minds, but to present, I guess, a certain truth without, I guess without an agenda, actually, but maybe to be genuine to my experience.
I think the notion of being genuine to both the story and to yourself and your own experience is something that comes up a lot in this work. Can you just chat me through the work, particularly about your journey in the car and that video work?
Yeah, so the work is it's the journey from Blackguard Gully, where some of the riot happens, to Currawong, where James Roberts' farm was, and he was known to be sympathetic to the Chinese. So for whatever reason, they all decided to journey there, and you can imagine they'd just been beaten up, their possessions had been looted, their tents had been burnt. Some of them had their, some had been scalped, and yeah, it was cold and dark and, you know, rainy. So that is something I could never ever experience. So for me, I didn't want to just redo that walk, sort of just do that. So I did it in my context, which was I had a car and there was roads. So we literally just drove the stretch, but it was also on that other layer about the differences between me and those Chinese. So that the idea that it's not my story to tell in many ways, because through space and time I'm so different to those Chinese, and I'm not even born from their region, you know. My mother being from the northern parts of China, being Han Chinese, and most of them were from Canton. So it's about that perception, I think, because, you know, we would never associate current English migration with, you know, people from the First Fleet, but we would associate me, who's born in Australia, to someone who's come from China in the Gold Rush era, just because of this sort of Asian horde mentality that we're all sort of the same, but we're very, very different. But, you know, still share many, you know, similar cultural markers as well, obviously, which makes it a lot more appropriate for me to tell the story than, I guess, a lot of other people. This story is probably, you know, it wasn't just about the Chinese. It's actually a much more universal story about, you know, how we treat people. Yeah, for me, I always draw comparisons with that event and the Cronulla riots that, yeah, I feel like it's a story that should resonate with our current, you know, the crises we have around the world.
That there was Nicole Beck chatting to John Young and Jason Fu. The Burrungong Fray is open to the public now until the 12th of August, and it's free. Nicole can actually, she actually put in a note saying that she cannot recommend checking out more. So head to the 4A Centre for Contemporary Asian Art in Chinatown. It'll be a great exploration of what is a terrible time in history in Australia. It is about 2 minutes to 12, which means my time is just about up. Big thanks to all our guests today. If you've missed anything from the show, just head to 2SER.com and look up So Hot Right Now, and you can find all our stories there as well as our playlist. It is technically the end of financial year. You've got about a day left. Today, actually. So today is the last day. If you want to donate to 2SER for a tax deductible, I can't even speak, a donation. Today's that day. If you want to pop online and do that, just head to 2SER.com and click on the donate button. Every bit of your donations helps this station. At the moment, we are building a new studio, so the funds of your donation will go to that, and we can keep doing what we love here, as well as deliver you the best stories, ideas, and music right here on 2SER. I'm going to leave you with just a little bit of some music from Sin Kane. This one's called New Name. My name is Sophie. I'll see you next week for more on So Hot Right Now. Till then, bye.